This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Active Quest episode 113. I'm one of your hosts, Joseph Yaden. Joining me today is the beautiful British boy, Chris Pendle. What do you have on your shirt there? What do you got there?
Street Fighter, man.
Who's that? Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. Just OG Street Fighter. Okay, yeah. Beautiful.
It's got like this 80s retro kind of moon behind it, and it looks really sick.
It does. It does, yeah.
But yes.
Chris, how are things?
I'm a sleepy boy. Yeah, it's been a bit of a challenging week, but I've got through it. How are you?
We're drowning in the games.
Yeah.
Just so many. I mean, it's kind of a dumb thing to complain about. It's too many free video games. I don't know. Anyway, Chris, it's good to be here with you. Josh, you're looking lovely as always with your cardigan. How are things,
thanks,
Josh?
I'm tired. I'm working on a Resident Evil 2 article right now, and I'm really excited about it. I pitched a new kind of feature that could potentially be a series at RetroWare. It was one of those, like, that sounds cool. Go ahead and write the first one, and then let's
see how.
Yeah, but I'm excited. I even went through and found really really old like advertisements and pictures from like 1998 magazines for some of the pictures. Yeah.
Cool.
It's good.
Awesome. Josh Nichols, by the way. Hello, Josh. Hope everybody is doing well. Thank you for joining us today. Lots of video games, lots of things to talk about. A couple things before we get into what we're going to discuss. Remember, you can always reach us on Twitter at ActiveQuestShow, via email at ActiveQuestPodcast@gmail.com. And remember to keep those iTunes ratings coming. It really helps us out.
Share the show too if you like it.
Share the show. Yeah. Thank you.
Retweet.
Share it with your share it with your neighbor.
Yeah.
Share it with your dog, your neighbor's dog. Yeah. What else? Am I missing anything? I guess that's it. Okay, here we go. Run of show. Here we go. So here's what we're gonna talk about. Like I said, lots of video games have come out. Lots of video games to discuss. We'll talk a little bit about this Balan Wonderworld. Am I saying that right? Balan? 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 I have no idea.
I like that one. Yeah, Balan. Balan sounds cool.
Balan.
Balan.
I said that to Kennedy. I was like, yeah, this Balan or whatever is not doing well. She goes, Bland Wonderworld? Is that what it's called? Bland Wonderworld? Like, no, that's not, but that's really
great. Definitely
not
Bland.
Start calling it that.
That would be a really bland? Good subtitle for like your review headline. More like Bland Wonderland. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it's Wonder World, but I thought it was Wonderland also.
Bland
it's like
Underworld.
It's like a Mandela effect. I swear that game was called Wonderland, but it's not. It's Wonder World. I don't know. Couple things. Let's see. I'm just looking through here. A new Pikmin AR mobile game was announced. Not really much to discuss about that, but you know how much I love Pikmin. We'll talk about the new Resident Evil movie. And then the ID at Xbox showcase with a bajillion indie games. We'll quickly cover that. I think the big story of the week, though, is this report here about the PS3 and PS Vita stores shutting down, which was originally reported by The Gamer. And we'll talk about that. We got some listener questions. Chris and I have been playing a little Monster Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Monster Hunter.
Show
Rise.
Me the ropes.
A little bit. It's very complicated. Chris, we also played It Takes Two.
Yes.
A very good video game.
It's a very good video game.
It's got the stamp of approval. A very good video game. Josh, you've been playing. Hold on. Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Volume 1.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. And a little game called Gex Enter the Gecko. Never heard of it. So yeah, we got a lot to discuss. Chris, I know you said you're tired. We'll try to, for the sake of your you know, you staying awake and editing and stuff, we'll try to keep it to a
We'll just end it right now. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
I really like our last episode, so if you can give that some love, share it around, you know, download it, that'd be fantastic, because that took me a long time to edit, and I think Doc Squiddy was really cool to talk to about his game.
Yeah, adios. I think we need to have more developers on here, yeah, as well, because it is very fascinating.
It's fascinating to get their insight, and you know, it was awesome just to get his thoughts on like PlayStation Plus and those kind of deals and how they work. We've been thinking about that for a while on this podcast, I think.
Oh yeah, that's right. We asked him, like, is this a good thing? And he said, was it usually a lump sum? But it's like guaranteed money, right. so it's worth it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So anyway, check that episode out. That was episode 112. Thank you again to Doc for coming on the show. Okay, so just a couple quick things here. This Balan Wonderworld, it is Wonderworld. Okay, I was like, fuck, is it Wonderland? I just did it. I do that every time. Ugh. Wonderworld is, first of all, it's not getting very good reviews.
No surprise there.
And I believe Square didn't send out early copies, which is never a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's that dumb guy at Square Enix that keeps, accepting these pitches? Because, like, we had, like, the Other Man or something like that. The Quiet Man. The Quiet Man.
Yeah.
And now this. Like,
yeah.
It has this weird kind of, like, side thing going on where it's, like, just finding the bottom of the barrel and just bringing it out. Anyway, that might be too mean. I'm sorry.
I like when they don't do review codes, but the game's good. That doesn't happen that often, but I remember what happened with Doom 2016. Everyone was like, ooh, is it going to be bad? Because Bethesda didn't give out review codes. And then the reviews all hit.
That's right.
And it was like, oh, this game is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Also, Balan is $60.
I didn't know that.
It's literally a $60 game. I thought maybe it was a $30 or $40 game. It is $60.
That sucks. Okay, hold on. Let me get into the actual story here. So the story with this is that during one of the final bosses, or the final boss, there is footage that is potentially triggering to those with epileptic tendencies. So lots of flashing lights. And games have that sometimes, and a lot of times it's like negligible or like not too bad or not noticeable or whatever. But in this, I watched it, and a lot of people watched it, and it's like, how did this get past CERT? Like, yeah. I don't understand. So anyway,
maybe the certificate, maybe the CERT guys that certify these games, maybe they just didn't want to get through this game. Maybe they just dropped it. They say it's probably fine.
They didn't even play through it. Oh fuck!
They looked at the cover of the game and went, "No, that's certified. It's good."
But honestly, I'm not surprised, because when I played the demo, I felt ill. For some reason, I don't know why, the visuals, it might be flashing lights, I don't know, but I felt really ill, like playing a VR game or something like that after.
I felt ill the first time I saw it. Yeah. Ever. I was just like, that's fucking horrifying, I never want to touch that. Anyway, so Liana Ruppert over at Game Informer actually, like, basically published, like, a PSA for that, and then the Balan studio or Balan company, whatever, they said that they were going to release a day one patch, and apparently it's been fixed, so
good.
I guess that's good. I don't think we're going to be covering that game really in terms of playing it, so nobody threatened us with a review code either. Okay, here's a story that I could probably do a whole episode on by myself, just talking about it, but I'm not going to do that. But anyway, there were a couple reports from Eurogamer, and then also Modern Warzone, which is a Call of Duty website, that basically says that this year's Call of Duty is going to be set in World War II, and it is codenamed Vanguard. Let's see. Call of Duty World War II Vanguard, and from what I understand, that name is probably going to be changed at least slightly. At least that's what the report said. Yeah. The one thing that was interesting, though, is on the Eurogamer report, there was a little bit of a discrepancy. Eurogamer, here, let me read this right here. This is from Eurogamer. This is Wesley Yinpool. Quote, Modern Warzone also reports, quote, the entire game takes place in an alternate timeline where 1945 wasn't the end of World War II, end quote, and is set in the 1950s. Eurogamer understands this detail isn't quite right, and Vanguard has a traditional World War II setting. So at this point, it's kind of unclear where in the timeline this is going to take place. But
it's interesting.
Nonetheless,
I think with that name Vanguard, like there's a famous ship called the HMS Vanguard, which was a battleship that was built during that time. So for the Royal Navy. So perhaps that has something to do with the game. That is going to be more like ship combat elements. Because we saw that map in the previous Call of Duty game, right? Black Ops Cold War. There was like a ships around the map. There were like it was all like focused on like a carrier. I can't remember. It's been a while on a battleship or something. So I think maybe they could focus more on that with the campaign. But I'd be down to play another World War II game.
I think in and of itself it's okay. But my whole concern is with Warzone. I don't know how that's gonna work. The idea of Warzone being a consistent thing, but then Call of Duty games that come out each year are different in theme. It just doesn't make sense how that's going to work with Warzone. Yeah. Like, I actually tweeted about this, and a lot of people had their own, like, ideas and stuff, and all of them, like, make sense, but like, nothing really is, like, great. Like, no solution is great for how that's integrated into Warzone, because, you know, you've got your World War II weapons, but how are those going to compete with your modern weapons? Are they going to just be skins?
That's what they should do, I think, is just do skins. It'd probably be the easiest way.
I just find it weird because, like, why don't you just let that game be its own thing? Why does it have to be tied into
marketing?
These new
exactly.
games?
Yeah, I agree.
Because they want people to buy the
like
game.
Like, Call of Duty Mobile isn't connected to the modern shooters. I don't see why this one has to be.
Right. Yeah, so I think what it is Warzone has led to a lot of sales of Modern Warfare and Black Ops Cold War because they're all tied together and there's advertisements across both. It's marketing and it's a way to make money. But yeah, I'm with you in terms of like actual gameplay and, you know,
it'd be easier and they could just have ads for the hey, watch this ad for the new Call of Duty game and we'll give you some battle points or whatever, you know, like
yeah, that'd be cool. So anyway. That's probably true, and obviously that'll be out this October or November, typically, is when the Call of Duty games come out. Speaking of November, it seems like Halo Infinite is probably going to come out in November of this year. Obviously, it was delayed a year, basically, and Verlon Roberts, who is an actor on the game, seems to have said that it's going to be coming out in November. We've got actually a story from GamesRadar that you can read here by Kieran Cryer. But yeah, Josh, I wanted to ask you about this. What did you make of this timing? I think you mentioned that this is probably this is what you were expecting.
Yeah,
right?
This is what I was expecting. Halo usually comes out in November. So when they delayed it, like when they first delayed it, my first thing was, okay, it's coming out in November. Like, they're not going to delay it for a month or two. They're just going to go, you know what? Let's just release it when we always do and get an extra year of development time.
Yeah. So obviously this isn't officially confirmed, but there's an interview with Roberts here. And yeah, they mentioned that it's going to probably be coming out in November.
I'm excited too. It gives everybody more time to do replays of games. Because I haven't had a chance to, you know, replay any of the Halos in the last few months at least. I wanted to replay at least, you know, a couple of them. And I haven't had time, so I'm happy that it was delayed personally.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to play that, and I think it's going to be really good, especially that, you know, you can tell that 343 is taking feedback into consideration, and man, they got an extra year. Like, that's awesome. Like, think of all these games that launch in an unfinished state, and then a year later, they're pretty good.
We can't do that.
That happens, like, that happens often, though, right?
Yeah.
If you just give them that year to begin with, it'll probably be good.
Right? I feel like Halo Infinite as well is like make or break for the series. Like, it has to succeed at this point, or it's just going to go the way of the dodo.
They still have their TV show coming out soon, too. Like, more information came out on that. So I think they're going to make sure it's good because, like you said, Chris, they have to. Like,
yeah. Right.
They can't.
I'm pumped. I'm so pumped for that. And I got my Series S. I'm going to play the shit out of that. I'm excited.
In Game Pass.
Josh, we need to... In Game Pass. Yeah, I don't have to pay for it. Although, I want to see if we can get it early.
Oh, my God. I would love that.
We'll see.
Just for coverage purposes, yeah. We'll see what happens with that. We'll probably find out maybe around summertime. Speaking of delayed games, unfortunately, Back 4 Blood, which is the spiritual successor, I guess, to Left 4 Dead, has been delayed by kind of a long time. It was originally supposed to come out June 22nd, but it will now come out October 12th.
Here's a
statement by Turtle Rock. Spooky time. Turtle Rock Studios, the developer of Back 4 Blood, says, quote, Turtle Rock Studios is working hard to make Back 4 Blood the best game it could possibly be at launch, and the team needs more time to do this. Therefore, we will release Back 4 Blood on October 12th, 2021. We thank our community for its continued support and are excited to share that there will be an open beta this summer, end quote. So this year has been pretty packed in terms of delays. I remember pretty much at the beginning of January, games started getting delayed. I think Outriders actually was delayed in January because it was supposed to come out in March or something.
Yeah.
And then it seems like every couple weeks, a big game is delayed, sometimes into next year. So this isn't necessarily surprising to me. And Josh, as you mentioned, closer to spooky time, yeah. I think this makes sense.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Honestly, even if it was done, it makes more sense to release it then. You know?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think we're going to see this much more. I know Jason Schreier, he was pointing towards this. He kind of hinted that there's more delays on the way. This is an instance of that. Humankind, I think that's what it's called, from Sega. That was delayed as well. And it was really, really delayed like quickly because I covered it for April 2021 games to look out for, and then it got delayed like soon after it got published, so so I think we should expect more delays like this, and I think that's fine, honestly.
Yeah,
I do just too. Because of the COVID pandemic, the schedules have probably been pushed back, it's just probably just gonna come out later than we expect.
I understand being disappointed when your favorite game gets delayed too, but realistically, I promise you that there's something out there that you could play that you'll enjoy.
There's so many games out there, like
even outside of Game Pass, like even before you even get the subscription services, like there's tons of games that you could that have gone down in price for the last year or two that you probably haven't played. You know, so
yeah,
go pick some of those.
Go play The Evil Within Prey or one of those games. Dishonored 2, yeah.
Morrowind.
Okay, speaking of new games here, Nintendo just like randomly announced this Niantic partnership, and it looks like they're making a Pikmin game. It's a mobile game, and it's AR. Chris, you shut your whore mouth. Chris, you shut your whore mouth. Chris, I'm not a whore. I love how you said that. Okay. I don't think you're a whore, Chris. But, so Pikmin is one of my favorite games. Let me read this here because it's interesting. This is gonna... It seems like it's gonna play similarly to Pokemon Go, just in that you've got this AR sort of, mechanic or formula. Let me read this here. This is a press release from Nintendo. This is on the Nintendo website. Niantic and Nintendo team up to create a mobile application featuring Pikmin, the first in a series of apps that the two companies will develop together. The title is designed to make walking more fun. Okay. Just reading through here. AR technology company Niantic and Nintendo are partnering together to jointly develop apps that combine Niantic's real-world AR technology with Nintendo's beloved characters. The first title the two companies are developing together is based on the Pikmin franchise, with gameplay activities designed to encourage walking and make the activity more enjoyable. The app is scheduled to launch globally later in 2021 with Niantic as the publisher. The title will also be the first title created by Niantic Tokyo Studio, Niantic's development studio established in April. That's pretty much it. We don't know what the game is, but on the Nintendo tweeted this out, and the picture is a bunch of Pikmin running around on the floor or on the ground, and then there's like a pair of legs. So like, I guess
it seems like a natural fit. Like, I didn't think of it, but it seems like it would work pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so like the Pikmin are following you, maybe something like that. And they all have their different abilities, and you pick up resources as you walk around, and I don't know, something like that. That's kind of what I imagine. And Chris, you were yawning at that. Have you ever played Pikmin?
No, I don't even think you've played it. The concept kind of bores me.
Oh my god, it's amazing. Yeah, it's really so cool. Fun. There's like boss battles and like puzzles and shit. Oh man, you're totally wrong.
You don't need to play
that.
One and two. You can just jump in at three. Like, it's set up for you to jump in at
You don't
three.
Remember me like raving
the,
about
the,
that
the
game?
The thing
how
is,
awesome
I would
is?
Play it if Nintendo dropped their prices.
Oh, that
oh,
won't happen.
Not
gonna
do that.
Exactly.
My Walmart saw his Other M for $60, and I'm like, that's not gonna happen. No one's gonna buy Other M for $60.
But, I don't know, the more exciting part of this news is that they'll be working on other Nintendo franchises as well. So I would love to, like, Breath of the Wild, but in AR, where you find different creatures and treasure along the way in your walks, because it's kind of natural for Zelda to work with this.
Put Star Fox on phones so I can gyro and shoot stuff. Seriously, that'd be so much fun.
Like, what
other
they're
not using
Nintendo
Star Fox anyway,
there's a bunch. I mean, you could pretty much do it with almost anything.
Dylan's
Mario
Rolling
Kart.
Western. Bring him back. You guys remember Dylan? The armadillo? I love him.
What's his name?
Dylan. Dylan's
Dylan
Rolling
the
Western
armadillo?
On 3DS. It was a semi-open world tower defense game, and it was a cowboy armadillo.
Oh. No, I don't remember.
It was good.
Is that like a downloadable game?
Yeah, it was really cool.
I don't
Can you imagine like a first person Fire Emblem game?
No,
where,
I don't
like, want to
get
stabbed. Sure. What?
I sure can't. You're like on a grid with other people. That'd be kind of cool. It's in first person. Yeah. That'd be kind of interesting.
Harry
they
Potter
can make
chess.
It work, honestly.
I'm down.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, I do think it's fascinating that there are other titles we're working on as well.
Sorry for the Pikmin height.
It's not nice, Chris.
I know.
Pikmin's very good.
I apologize. I'm a whore.
Pikmin's very good. You're a whore. Did you say you're a whore? I'm a whore. Okay. That wraps us up for the quick stuff. So why don't we jump into some news? Is everybody ready for some news?
Yes.
Ready.
Chris, are you sure you're ready? You don't look ready.
I'm ready.
There you go. There's a smile. Okay, let's dive into some news. That face you're making is the face you make when you listen to a really nasty riff. It's like a frown almost, but where you're just like, the listeners can't see the face I'm making, obviously. If you look up the Meshuga face, actually, here, let's see. Meshuga face. Let's see. Yep, there it is. There. Look up Meshuga face. You'll
know
exactly
who makes
what
that face
about.
A lot is Pikachu.
Yeah, he kind of does.
I'll bet he's listening to some thick riffs when he's with his, like, Pikachu AirPods or something.
I love how you said that, some thick riffs. Let's talk about Resident Evil. There's a new movie coming out, which, if you just quickly say that, Resident Evil movie, you probably roll your eyes because you think of the,
Paul Thomas, it's W.S.
Anderson. Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson, yeah.
Paul,
isn't that it?
Paul W.S. Anderson?
That's it.
Something
yeah,
like
that's
that.
It.
Anyway.
At first, I almost said movies. Wes Anderson. I was like, I would watch a Wes Anderson Resident Evil movie.
Yeah. I was like, wait, Wes Anderson's good. Hold on a second. Yeah. Anyway, the ones with the Mila Jovovich or something.
His wife.
Those are bad.
Yeah, they just make Resident Evil movies together.
Oh, that's his wife? Yeah. I didn't know that.
That's why he doesn't have to put a lot of effort in. Basically, they're just like having fun making movies and getting money. Like,
no shit. I didn't realize that, huh? Okay, you learn something new every day. All right, here we go. So we've got a story here from Variety. This is Elise Schaefer. Resident Evil director Johannes Roberts reveals title and details of upcoming film. Quote, the upcoming Johannes Roberts directed Resident Evil film now has a name. Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Not terrible.
I like
could
that.
Could be worse. Yeah. Could be better. Not terrible. So far, I have no reason to be upset. Roberts revealed the title and details of the movie's plot during a panel with IGN's Lucy O'Brien at South by Southwest, I think is what that stands for, on Saturday. Shout out to Lucy O'Brien, by the way.
Yeah.
Speaking about the genesis of the title, Roberts, who has directed both the 47 Meters Down films, said that the setting of Raccoon City plays a big role in the film. Quote, the movie is very much an origin story for Resident Evil, end quote, Robert said. Quote, it's an ensemble piece, and Raccoon City plays a big part and is a character in the movie. It's about this group of people all coming from different angles, some coming into town, some already having grown up in this town, meeting over this one fateful night, end quote. And then the article goes on, the film will follow the original Resident Evil characters of Claire and Chris Redfield, Jill Valentine, and Leon S. Kennedy, Leon, and will play up the horror aspect of the video games, Roberts said. Roberts looked to John Carpenter films such as The Fog, that's kind of cool, for inspiration, as well as the original video games. Yeah, and then it just kind of goes on. We don't want to read the whole thing here. You guys can take a look at the Variety article. But the nice thing is that, yeah, this seems like it's going to be more faithful to the video games, which I think is, that's like usually the number one complaint with video game movies is that the people in charge of making the movies have no idea what the video game is.
Yeah.
It's basically like, just slap.
Most video game movies that are good for a long time, we would say it was good, but it was like good with caveats. Like, Silent Hill was a good movie, but like it wasn't a good adaptation of the game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice to have.
I have kind of like
good movies.
I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I love Resident Evil so much. I would pay $1,000 for. I don't know. I don't know. I'm very excited about Resident Evil Village. Very, very excited about that, and you know, just the future of the series. I love it so much. So like. In my, like, for me, I'm the guy who's gonna watch this, right? Like, I'm the target audience for this, and I'm mildly pumped for this. I'm just gonna say
that title is smart as well, because that's gonna get classic Resident Evil fans to come to watch it as well. Because Raccoon City is like that's the pivotal moment in Resident Evil history, and that's like such a treasured part of
it. Lets them know, hey, this isn't those other movies. History, come watch this one.
Yeah.
Right. And the way it's phrased, Welcome to Raccoon City, that kind of almost makes me think that there might be more. Like, Welcome to Raccoon City, like this is the start of something big. Like, I don't know.
Honestly,
I think, you know,
I'm hoping this is good, but I'm already excited for the other one too. So like, even if this one's just fine, at least I'm getting my
the show.
Yeah, my Resident Evil, well, the show, and we're getting a movie. We're getting we're getting like a CGI.
Yeah,
we're getting that too. That's like Resident Evil 4, in between 4 and 5. So, yeah.
Interesting. So, we actually have a question here. We'll answer this now just because it's relevant. Zion Grassel, I think that's how you say the last name, over from Nintendo Life. Asks, what are your hopes for the new Resident Evil movie? I'm personally hoping it's more focused on the horror of surviving the Raccoon City outbreak than the overall action of killing zombies. And that kind of idea goes for the games as well, right? Like, I'm way more into the survival aspects than the shooting. Like, you know, obviously Resident Evil 5 and 6, we've talked about it a million times. I like the survival horror aspects better. Yeah, I think you can do a lot with, like, the camera angles, kind of like the original games.
Oh, that'd be so cool if they did.
To make it more like claustrophobic feeling and like up the ante in the horror department. Yeah. I think there's a lot they can do with this to make it scary, because the Paul W.S. Anderson films are just action movies. Like, it's just people blowing
away
zombies, right?
If they do it right, it's cheaper. Like, you don't have to have a million explosions and everybody with a machine gun. You know, if you do it right, it could be cheap.
I think it'd be cool, though, if they keep the suspense growing, and then at the end, at the climax, there's the big boss fight with...
Yeah. I think that could be cool.
Mr.
Yeah.
X, that'd be fantastic.
I want Danny DeVito to play Mr. Really X, cool. though. I love Danny DeVito. I want him to be chasing them in the next Mr. X hat.
I do worry, though, that there's too many characters in this movie. Like, I feel like it should be split in two movies, because, like, they each have their own perspectives in the story. And I feel like if you put that all in one movie, that might feel rushed. But
yeah, you might run into like a Spider-Man 3 scenario where there's too many characters.
If they change it to like one central antagonist instead of two, throughout Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3, then I think that would work.
I want the zapping system to be in the movie too. I want there to be two different beginnings and endings, like a mix and match.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that'd be wild. That'd be wild. Anyway, I'm pumped for this. I'm a sucker. I'm almost like willing to give it the benefit of the doubt just because I want it to be good. And that's probably bad. That's like setting myself up for disappointment. But nonetheless, I'm very excited about that. And I think it could be really cool, and I'm cautiously optimistic. Okay, let's talk about this ID at Xbox showcase. There's a lot here, and we just don't have time. We don't have the bandwidth to literally go through all of these games here. But what I think we can do is I'll just read off the games that were announced. And if there's anything on there that you think is worth discussing, which I think there is, we'll talk about it and sort of do like an abridged version of this just because there's so much here.
Yeah.
But yeah, on what was this? Friday or Thursday? There was this Xbox ID. It's called ID at Xbox Showcase, and they just announced all these new indie games or indie games that already existed but maybe hadn't been on Xbox and are coming to the platform. So here's the list of games that were featured during the showcase. I will read them alphabetically here. And thank you to GamesRadar for compiling this. Connor Sheridan. Adios. Hey, there you go. Aerial Knights Never Yield. Airport for Aliens Run by Dogs. Alba, a Wildlife Adventure. It just sounds like I'm making up words. Alchemic Cutie. Among Us. Art of Rally. Astria Ascending, that's that game that's made by the Final Fantasy developers.
Oh.
That's a JRPG, it looks really cool. Atrio the Dark Wild, a trio, I don't know. Blaster Master Zero.
Oh, that game is sweet. Blaster Master Zero is on the Switch. That game is awesome.
Yeah, I've played that. Chivalry 2, Cloud Gardens.
Yeah, you played that, Josh. Clousy.
Yeah, we reviewed that.
Yeah.
Craftopia, Dark Alliance. Death's Door, Demon Turf, Despelote, Echo Generation,
so excited for that
Enlisted,
game.
XO1, Exomecha, Griftlands, Hello Neighbor 2, Iron Corbo Kung Fu Janitor, Night Squad 2, Lake. Lake, we've covered that. Lake is supposed to, isn't that supposed to be an, that's a... Is that exclusive to Xbox? I don't know. Josh, I think I remember us talking about that. Last Oasis, Lawn Mowing Sim, for those of you who just...
I'm excited for Lawn Mowing Sim.
Wish they could mow
a
lawn,
but
don't
have one. I can
request
a review code if you want, Josh.
Dude, we gotta review that game.
Okay.
I lost my place. Oh, Little Witch in the Woods. That sounds like that might be spooky. Loot River, Lost Eidolons? Mad Streets, Moonglow Bay, Narita Boy. Is that like Naruto? Is that
no,
Naruto's
it's definitely
girlfriend?
Not Naruto focus. Okay. It's more like a cyberpunk. No, it's not cyberpunk. It's more like 80s kind
of... That's out right now. Yeah, I've got that downloaded on my Xbox right now.
It's I can't really describe it. It's kind of like retro 80s kind of electronic kind of look, and it looks kind of cool.
Like Hotline Miami, perhaps.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. Yeah, in a way, but it's more atmospheric, I guess.
Nobody Saves the World, that's from Drinkbox. We'll talk about that one, I think. Onsen Matter, Princess Farmer, Rust, the console edition.
That's probably the biggest
second news. Yeah, Second Extinction, Song of Iron, Soup Pot, Spaceline Crew, Stalker 2, Super Space Club, The Ascent, The Big Coon, Con, not Coon, Con. I'm an idiot. The Big The Big Con. The Forest Cathedral, The Last Stop, The Rift Breaker, The Wild at Heart, 12 Minutes, which a lot of people seemed excited about, Void Train, and We Are the Caretakers. So, out of the... I mean, there's just so many games, obviously. Yeah, I wanted to just quickly mention, Josh, I know you said this before we started recording. What is it? Nobody Saves the World?
Yeah, Nobody Saves the World.
Let's see. Yep, Nobody Saves the World. That's the Drinkbox game. So Drinkbox Studios is the team that made Guacamelee and Guacamelee 2 and Severed, which was that touchscreen game. Very, very cool. It's like a first-person dungeon crawler. Very,
it's
very
on
cool
Switch
game.
And Vita.
The Vita, whoa.
Yeah, interesting release.
Yeah. So Nobody Saves the World is an RPG with a bunch of different like classes and stuff. It's like top down, kind of, or not really top down. It's like isometric-y kind of, and it looks different for this studio because it's like more RPG focused. But the art style is pretty much like what you would expect from them, and I think that looks really cool. Josh, you were pumped for this.
Yeah, you like
you?
Get to take on different forms. So like it showed them turning into different animals and different. It's almost like a class-changing game, kind of like Bravely Default.
Yeah.
You can change your job system.
Yeah,
but it's
a
job system thrown into like an RPG kind of roguelite. Like, it looks really cool. Yeah, I didn't know about this until this event. If it was announced before,
it was announced. I think it was announced at the event.
This looks great. This and 12 Minutes are what I'm looking forward to the most.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people were pumped about that. Chris, anything jumping out at you on this list here?
Yeah, Edge of Eternity. I'm looking forward to that. It's like a JRPG inspired title that has musical contributions from Yasunori Mitsuda, who worked on Xenoblade Chronicles and Chrono Trigger. And then I looked up Little Witch in the Woods, and this is just from Xbox's website here. Little Witch in the Woods is a fantasy role playing game where you get to live the life of a witch. You'll play as Ellie, a little witch that has just come to a new town. You are set to be a part of the witch's house. However, when you arrive, it appears that the town is near empty and the witch's house is in disrepair. Your ultimate goal is to master witchery by learning potions as an apprentice at the witch's house and gather materials around the land. So it's not a horror game at all. And it has this really cute
I thought it might be spooky
kind of like pixel art kind of style, so yeah, I don't know, that's something I'm looking forward to checking out. But
out of those 55 games, 22 of those are coming to Game Pass.
That's excellent.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I think all those games are all fine and dandy, but the game of the show for me is Lawn Mowing Simulator.
But yeah, that Super Pot game as well. I was able to check out the stream a little bit, and that was quite fascinating because, like, you're playing as an influencer or on this Facebook-like website for just food. And
oh, weird.
Yeah, like, it even has, like, a 5-second rule kind of, like, mechanic in it.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. It looks like a cooking kind of simulator game that's unlike most on the market, so, yeah.
Little complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Hello Neighbor 2, missed opportunity. Should have called it Hello Again Neighbor. Would have been a lot better. It would have stood out. Would have been good. Welcome back, Neighbor.
I thought the presentation was kind of bad, personally. I thought the interviews kind of dragged on, and some of them were really awkward, especially at Super.
I don't watch those. I just watch afterwards. Same with Nintendo Directs.
Yeah.
I watch them when they're done. I fast forward through the Smash Brothers stuff and the things I don't want to watch. And then I read articles on those. By that I mean they need to make these better, or people are gonna do what I do probably and not watch them. Because
and then the presenters were talking like the crap, and I'm like, just show us the games, you know? Like,
so
pacing was really bad.
A lot of games, a lot of them are probably going to be really awesome, and as Josh said, 22 of them are coming to Game Pass, so you have no reason to not check out.
Including Nobody Saves the World, that's one of the ones coming to Game Pass.
Yeah, exactly.
What is Xbox Game Pass, Josh?
It is the, well, we got to figure this out, because it was already the best deal in gaming, and then they bought Bethesda. Like, now what?
Yeah.
It's the greatest deal in gaming ever.
It is the ultimate deal in gaming.
There we go. There
I love that. The ultimate deal in gaming.
We gotta get that ad.
I'm working on it.
We gotta get that Game Pass money.
I tagged Xbox. I said, how does one go about getting a sponsorship? They didn't reply.
I tried that before as well.
They didn't reply. Okay, let's cover this last story here, and then we'll take a little break. According to sources familiar with the matter, don't you love that? Sources familiar with the matter. The PS Vita and PS3 and PSP stores are going to be permanently closed this year. So this comes from The Gamer. This is Kirk McKeon. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the first couple paragraphs here. Quote, the PS3, PS Vita, and PSP stores aren't long for this world. According to a source familiar with the situation, verified by The Gamer, the stores are due to be closed down from July. The announcement is planned for the end of this month. PSP's and PS3's stores are to be closed on July 2nd, while the PS Vita store will stay open until August 27th. After those days, you will no longer be able to purchase digital copies of games or DLC for any of the Sony consoles mentioned above. Okay, so this is... assuming this is true, which I think The Gamer is a pretty reputable source, so you know, we'll
I write for The Gamer, so it was quite interesting to see the website I write for just at all over the place being sourced.
Right?
So,
yeah, exactly. Everybody was.
I will second Kirk McKeon on this. I trust him as a editor.
Okay. Yeah. So. I don't want to get too far in the weeds with this because this is a whole gigantic conversation about game preservation and, you know, what's the statute of limitation? Like, that's a huge conversation that, again, we could do a whole episode on. Without getting too far into the weeds with that, let's quickly give our thoughts on this. And then I think we have a couple listener questions as well that we'll discuss with that as well. Chris, assuming this is true, what are your takes on this? And I also believe you published an article recently about games that you should buy before the store closes down. So maybe you can shout that out as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, so on TechRaptor, I wrote a piece on 5 PS3 digital games that we'll miss. And to be honest... I was surprised when I was researching the article, because most of the PS3 games are actually on PlayStation Now. Most of the notable ones, anyway. So there's like a few indie projects here and there that aren't available, and like smaller projects from Sony that PlayStation might want to forget. I don't know. But yeah, it's annoying personally for me. I really don't like how Sony treats its retro content. I feel like with Xbox being backwards compatible with almost every system that they've released, Sony should be doing the same. I think it's possible to bring PSP games and Vita games to the system. I think that's doable. The PS3 has a specific engine in it that makes it hard to port over to future consoles, and Sony have explained that, but I feel like PSP and Vita games should be stored somewhere safe and be available to purchase on modern platforms. And I think Parappa the Rapper came from the PSP port. So they've shown that, yes, they can do it, but for some reason PlayStation has been putting money towards it, and it's frustrating, personally. Because I play a lot of retro games. I want to play my stuff. I want to play PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale on my PS5. You know, I want to do all sorts of different things, but it's just annoying to see how PlayStation's treating this. But at the same time, it's you know, the PS3 servers have been up for a very long time, and part of me thinks like this is real as well, because you can't access PSP, Vita, or PS3 games on the browser anymore. You used to, but right? No, you can't.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was a big question when the new store came up.
Yeah.
On the when the PS5 launched. Yeah, I think those are all good points. One thing I always think about too is like, for our jobs, sometimes we need to go back and play older games. And like, you literally can't, like, unless you have that system or whatever.
I mean,
and like,
an Xbox.
then what? You gotta track down a copy? Like, holy fuck. Yeah. Josh, what were your thoughts on this?
I think it's really odd that Nintendo and PlayStation have been in the industry longer than Microsoft, but they seem less concerned with not only the legacy of games, but their own legacies. Like, they don't even need to do it for preservation's sake. They could just sell the shit. First of all, you know, right. Like, that's weird to me. Like, why wouldn't you? Hey, look, we have 30 years of games. You can buy them. Like, I don't understand their resistance to that. It's weird. I also think it's odd that while this is happening, I can go download old games that were not available digitally on my Xbox. Like, that's weird to me. I don't understand why I can go buy Morrowind right now digitally. Mm-hmm. And like, PlayStation's like, hey, you can't re-download, you know, Jack and Daxter, even if you already bought it. Like, it's just bizarre to me. This kind of behavior is what keeps me, it's the kind of behavior that pushes me to stay in Xbox's ecosystem other than exclusives. You know, like, I already do all my third-party gaming over an Xbox, but, like, this just reinforces that, because,
yeah,
you know, I don't understand it. Like I said, I know I already said this, but, like, PlayStation, Nintendo, they've been in this longer. Like, the original Xbox came out 5 years after the PlayStation 1. So that's 5+ years that they've been doing this longer. Like, that's 5 years of games they could be, you know, selling. Like, I don't understand it.
It's very fascinating, too, when you pull up the... Just Game Pass. If you just pull up Game Pass, how many original Xbox games are on there, or 360 games? And then if you actually just, like, look through the marketplace for games to buy, I mean, there's a ton of original Xbox games on there. And I know PlayStation has that to an extent. You can do it with, like, certain PS2 games, but those were, like, specifically individually ported.
Yeah.
Whereas these aren't. And so, like, Chris, you mentioned that whole thing of, like, oh, the PS3 architecture is different and it makes it hard to port those games. I believe that, and I'm sure that's true, but they have to figure something out.
Xbox didn't even know that original Xbox compatibility would be possible. They were like, let's try it. Right. Let's see if we can figure this out.
Yeah. So. Microsoft figured it out. So, like, just from a competitor point of view, I don't know. It just seems
PlayStation also needs to sort its shit out with that stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Also, something else that I think is neat that Xbox is doing is they do all the work on this. Like, Ubisoft doesn't have to make their old games work. Xbox reaches out to them and they're like, hey, we can get Rayman running even better than it ran before. They show it to them and they go, yup, that's cool, go ahead. And then they start selling it. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, PlayStation could do the same thing. And the reason I bring that up is because think about the absurd amount of PS1 games and PS2 games that... I mean, those libraries are huge. You know?
And what's weird, too, is like... The technology, I think, is there somewhere, because there's a lot of PS1 games you can buy on the Vita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and beyond that, there's emulators. I mean, I know we're trying to cut it short, but I'm saying people have figured out how to do this on their computer. Sony could use that same technology and just put it in their fucking PS5. Like, there's a way to do it. I think they just don't want to do it.
Yeah, and that's fair, I guess. It's just kind of frustrating. You know, they're a company and they own all that shit, so they don't have to do anything they don't want to do. We got a couple questions, actually. So, and again, we have our question segment separate, but let's
these
cover
ones are
this
related,
while we're on the topic. Yeah, yeah. Otto Kratke says, or asks, are there any PS3 or PS Vita games y'all are scrambling to get? I'm trying to nab a PS3 now so I can get the Ratchet and Clank collection. Can't beat those originals. Yeah, that's a fair point. Off the top of my head, for PS3 games, the only one that I feel like is like kind of like a glaring issue is Metal Gear Solid. Like Metal Gear, well, I know those are PS2 games, but Metal Gear Solid 4, I feel like, is a big one.
That's the one that's going to be locked out. Yeah, that won't be available to play anymore unless you have a physical copy. That's a bummer.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so like that's a big one. The PS2 games, Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, I feel like are probably easier to get a hold of just because PS2s are just so plentiful.
Well, and those were re-released later, too.
They were re-released. But yeah, specifically, that's the one that always comes to mind because that was never ported or re-released on PS4 or anything like that. Chris, what do you have on this? Anything in mind? I know you mentioned PlayStation All-Stars.
Yeah, I know. I'm silly. That's also... I do want to play Folklore, a really old RPG that I've been wanting to play for a long time, but I can't get access to even on PlayStation now. And with Metal Gear Solid games, they're available on PlayStation now. So I think Sony's going to be like, hey, you know, they're available there. You can play them there.
I think that's the same kind of energy, though, as Xbox is raising the price of Gold. Yeah. Remember that? I think that's the same kind of thing. They shouldn't do that. Just quick PSA too. I know I'm not the first one to say this, I'm sure, but I just want to remind anyone listening, if you are a physical collector, now is the time to grab your shit because these prices are all going to jump up in the secondhand market now. eBay's going to get smart and go, oh, this game's only available if they have this
copy.
I hate
the used game market. I absolutely freaking hate it.
And it's crazy too because Josh, and you can probably attest to this because we both worked at GameStop, copies of Metal Gear Solid 4 were literally 99 cents. And literally, I'm not exaggerating. And those will go up probably because they're going to be. Yeah.
So even if you're like, oh, I'm physical, this doesn't affect me. No, it does. It does.
So we also have a question here from Alejandro. Alejandro asks, is there any info on what's going to happen once the stores do close? Will we be able to download our games afterwards? Do you think it's a good idea to get anything quickly before it closes? What are you guys going to do with your own PS3s if you have any? Okay, a few questions here. Any info on what's going to happen once the stores do close? I don't have any information like that.
It looks like re-downloads aren't going to be possible, kind of like the Nintendo Wii and Wii though, right? Like, even if you already purchased it.
I don't know, because you can... I think you can do you have to go through the store to do that? That's actually a really good question, because previously you were able, on the old version of the PlayStation Store through the browser, you were able to go through your download history. I find it really hard to believe that you wouldn't be able to download your games afterwards, but with the new store, I'm not sure.
You have to access the store to download your games on PS3, though, don't you?
No, I'm saying through the browser. I was thinking about it through the browser.
Oh, no.
Yeah, obviously you're not going to be... Yeah. But I don't even know that
until they say for sure, I would assume it won't be possible and re-download everything you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you go to the PlayStation Store right now, I imagine there's got to be some sort of re-download.
It's download list, this, yeah. Maybe? It's a download this.
Yeah, but what if that isn't, you know, available? Like, what if they remove that feature? Because Nintendo Wii did that, too. It had a re-download list, but that store is still gone.
Yeah, if they remove the feature, or if it's just the PS3 and Vita games aren't on there. For whatever, I'm actually gonna look it up right now just so we've got a for sure answer.
But while you talk about that, I think that it's a big issue that, you know, people are shifting to digital. What's gonna happen to all those games like in 20 years time? You know,
I don't know. I play an Xbox. I'll just be able to re-download them.
Yeah.
Bill Spencer's already said everything that works on the Xbox One will work going forward.
But then, even then, you know, what if Phil Spencer moves on to a different company?
Look how much they've doubled down on this.
That decides stuff like,
you know,
that.
I don't know. It's possible, but I'm just saying the issue is not physical versus digital. The issue is these fucking companies need to either invest in preservation or they need to promise to always sell them. Because locking out or not supporting emulation and preservation sites, but also not selling them is in my opinion not excusable.
It's,
you know,
stupid. Yeah.
They got to pick one. So if you're not going to sell it to me, then you know, make it like abandonware on PC. There's a shitload of games you can download on PC for free and it's legal, and it's because you can't buy it anymore. So consoles need to pick a lane. They can't do the no, you can only have this if you buy it from us, but we're not going to sell it lane, because that's a really shitty spot to, you know, be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so anyway, this is kind of, I'm looking here, game library, and I looked up, you know, how to re-download your games through the browser here. And when you click on game library, I'm just looking here, this looks like just PS4 and PS5 games. I'm scrolling all the way. I'm going to scroll all the way down and see what it does. PS4, PS4, PS4. Yeah, this is... Okay, this is what I was afraid of. So that's pretty much what I said. If you look at your re-download list or your purchase list, it's only PS4.
Are you on the
going
bottom
forward? Yeah, I scrolled all the way to the bottom.
Oh my god!
The first thing's Rezogun. That makes sense, right? Because Rezogun was a launch.
I just want to sucks. Make sure I clarify too, in case someone's like listening to this for the first time. This isn't an Xbox versus PlayStation thing for me. I'd be feeling the exact same way if it were flipped. It's just. It's more mind-boggling to me because PlayStation has all these franchises. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
And they haven't ported them. Like, Resistance. Right. They haven't ported Infamous. They haven't...
Oh,
like,
Resistance. Yeah, that's a great... And Infamous, the original
Killzone,
ones. Yeah,
the
yeah,
Killzone
yeah.
games. They're not on PS4. Like, what are you doing, PlayStation?
So like, Alejandro, to answer your question, any info on what happens when the stores close? Yeah, you're fucked, basically.
Like, and then
you're not going to be able
to
get those
PS3
games.
Store, like, the download system on that store sucks. Like, you can't find your stuff.
will you be able to download your games afterwards? No. That's from what I'm saying, no. It doesn't look like it. So you better get all those games on your system ready to go, and that's it.
And then I'll download SSX3 really quick for the original Xbox right now, because I can. Like,
I
understand this.
I also want to bring up all those PlayStation Plus games for PS3. Once those servers go down, won't be able to play them
anymore.
You
can't get them. Oh, yeah, that might, yeah. You think it's a good idea to get anything quickly before it closes? Yes. What are you guys going to do with your own PS3s? I'll have mine just in case, just if I ever want to play, you know, those handful of games that are PS3 exclusive, you know, that I can't get elsewhere. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea to be cautious with this and assume the worst, just because it's, Sony doesn't have a rich history with preservation and, you know, older
it's
games.
Weird too, because they used to, like, that was a thing. Like, they used to be like PS2 plays all your PS1 games, trade your PS1 in, whatever, you don't need it, you got your PS2, you know. And then the PS3
anyway,
too, it was fully
So we've spent enough time on that, so we do need to move on. So let's take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll do listener questions, and then we'll talk about what we've been playing. We will be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, everybody, we are back. Let's get into some listener questions here. Or did I fuck that up? I guess I fucked that up. Normally, we do the listener we do the listener questions and then we take a break, right? I don't know, Chris.
You used to do news and then break, then listener questions. This is a free.
Oh, okay. So this is fine. Okay, cool. It's been a week.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did that. So really, we only have two other questions to get through. And remember, you can always reach us on Twitter at ActiveQuestShow, via email at activequestpodcast@gmail.com, or every Wednesday we post our Twitter thread asking for questions and comments from our audience here. So we've got actually a question here. We answered a lot of them throughout the show, but we've got one here from number one 50 Cent Blood on the Sand fan. I'm sure you all are dying. to hear from this person. Number one 50 Cent Blood on the Sand fan says, Kratos, Master Chief, Lara Croft, and Baby G unit, G is for Grogu, always has been baby, were all added to Fortnite in the last months. When do you think 50 Cent is getting added? It's a crime that 50 Cent hasn't been added to this game already. He needs
my
to.
Only
when
problem
do
is
I
he's
think
bulletproof,
this is happening?
So it'll be like unfair.
Oh yeah,
we'll
yeah,
have to,
like
we'll have to take
cheat.
Away that ability for the game.
Oh,
otherwise,
my God.
Be overpowered. But
when
probably
do
soon.
We think 50? Soon.
Probably around E3.
Honestly, with Fortnite, you never know.
Honestly, like, if you had said this to me, like, 3 years ago, I'd be like, that's ridiculous. But, like, it still probably is ridiculous, but it's way more likely, I think, now than it ever has been, just because Fortnite is so crazy. I think here on August 42nd, August 42nd, that's when 50 Cent is going to be added. Okay, here we go.
August 50 Cent.
Hey, you know, with that update, there's going to be a candy shop available. And you can just
yeah, I'm sure there will be.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we've got one more question here. I'm sure you're all just, you have no idea who it possibly could be from. There's only one person it could be from, Chris and Josh. It's from number one Turner and Hooch fan.
Hooch!
No. Number one Turner and Hooch fan says, "Hey, my gaggle of goofy giggling gamers." That's a great alliteration, by the way. Gaggling, my gaggle of goofy giggling gamers. My question is, do you think that my copies of Turner and Hooch on VHS I ordered are stuck on the big boat in the Suez Canal? Oh, I ordered 51,000 copies.
I think Turner and Hooch fan caused this. This might be...
Yeah, you're the reason definitely. This happened. You have too many copies on the boat, and it's the weight is too much. And
they're going to find out that's what's on there. They're going to blow the ship up and just build a new ship, you know?
Well, number one, Turner and Hooch fan, I'm really rooting for you that you get your copies. Why 51,000? Why not just 50,000?
I think he's starting a cult. He's starting a cult.
Oh, absolutely.
Loving Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, and he's going to get people to join it, and then when they do, there's a bunch of weird stuff's going to
happen. Hanks is their savior.
Tom Hanks is their savior. Oh, God. As long as it doesn't get as weird as, like, what happens in Midsommar, the movie, I think we're okay. Because that movie just really creeps me out, like, a lot. It's, like, really creepy because I don't want to get too far. It's presented as this, like, happy thing, but it's, like, really creepy.
Hey, and I'm going to be on Turner & Hooch's show or something like that. I did some voice lines for him, and I was really wacky with him, so I might show.
Oh, beautiful. Cool. That sounds cool. Number one Turner & Hooch fan. So thank you for your question there. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. Okay, let's dive into what we've been playing. I don't think we'll have too much to report here just because we've only just started playing a lot of these games. Before we get into anything, though, I do want to say that I have finished Yakuza Like a Dragon. And boy, that is one of the best video games I've ever played. I mean it.
Wow.
Chris, you need to play this game.
Yeah,
I do. You need to.
I do, yeah.
You're required to play this game. Really, I think this game is required playing. I really do. This is up there, man, with, like, Portal and...
Really?
Like, up there with, yeah, like, Skyrim, whatever. You may or may not like Skyrim, but, like, important games. This is up there, man, this game. It's so funny. It's got one of the best stories ever in a video game, and that's coming from me, who doesn't usually care about video game stories. The ending, I was like... What even when the ending happened? And I'm sure you have heard me say this before, but I played the entirety of this game on my phone through remote play because that's how JRPGs are meant to be played on a handheld. Go play this game. Seriously, it's on Game Pass. Like, it is unfathomably good.
I don't know if that's this one's in Game Pass.
I don't think
it's not in Game Pass.
I think all the other ones are. This one's
not. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Thank you. I thought this was on... Well, nonetheless, it's on Xbox and there's a next-gen version.
I want to ask you this, Joseph. Do you think there'll be a sequel to this game with this protagonist?
Yeah.
Because I'm not interested in the action combat of the other Yakuza games. I'm more interested in the turn-based stuff with this.
Yeah. I think 100%. Ichiban is, like, such a fantastic character. He is a character that is, like, so likable, and he's got such a good heart, and he's like a good person, and you don't like when you play, I don't know, like The Last of Us, like those characters aren't really likable. Some of them are, but like they're kind of like assholes, some of them, or like Red Dead, some of those characters are assholes. I'm thinking of games with really good stories. This game, like the main character is like a really good person, and you root for them, and they don't have a mean bone in their body.
Well, so, and he always I was always I haven't finished it yet. I've finished like the first 2/3 of it though. He always made me proud. Like his response to every situation was always like, "Good on you. Good job."
So go Ichiban, go Adachi, go Namba, all those other characters.
I've heard really cool game. Him being related to like Sora in a way from others. So that makes me a bit more interested in the protagonist because I like happy-go-lucky characters.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Goku a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, little bit of Goku. Okay, let's dive into a little bit of Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. We don't have a whole lot to report on this, Monster Hunter Rise. This is the new Switch exclusive.
We got the review code pretty late. So that's...
From Capcom. Thank you so much, Capcom.
Yeah. So we won't have a lot of coverage till later, but...
So I've put, I'm a little embarrassed to say, 20 hours into this game and it came out yesterday. fuck. You know what I've been doing. And I was talking to Chris about this. Basically, this game is exactly what I was expecting, but keep in mind, I've played probably 500 hours of Monster Hunter in my life. So, like, I wasn't going into this expecting this, like, mind-blowing, groundbreaking thing, but like every time Monster Hunter comes out, I always get sucked in for at least 100 hours because it's one of those games where you're just like constantly chasing that gear, you know, the next piece of gear. And I think this game's gonna do really well for Capcom, even though it's exclusive to one platform, or it's on PC as well, or it's coming to PC or whatever, but pretty much it's you know, not on everything. So this game is really, really cool in that there's this sort of relationship that happens where there's like this always happens with Monster Hunter. There's a player who knows what they're doing and they're showing another player how to play. I think that's like what Monster Hunter is like known for. You always find and maybe it's a random player that you encounter. This player who's got really good gear and they've played a bajillion hours. And you ask them a million questions and they answer them because this game is complicated. And Chris, I wanted to bring you into this discussion as well because that's kind of what we did. I've played a lot. I was showing you how to play. What were your thoughts on this as a newcomer to Monster Hunter? Pretty much, I think you said you played maybe a little bit of another game, but basically you're a newcomer, right?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on Rise in terms of like how approachable it is? Is it too complex? What do you think about all that?
I feel like, so far, great game. I'm enjoying my time with it, but I feel like it's a game like I can only play with friends like you, Joseph, just to show me the ropes. I feel like the tutorials at the beginning are so overwhelming to the point I'm like the usual gamer, I think, like someone like me would be put off by it because I'm like, it's like you have a 45 minute tutorial, I just want to go hack and slash monsters, you know what I mean?
And the thing is with the tutorials too, it's like pretty much anytime you encounter a mechanic, like whether it's a new mechanic or not, just any mechanic, walking, interacting with NPCs, anything, there's a wall of text.
Yeah. The tutorials even worse. Like the tutorial mission in the story mode. Yeah, I haven't touched the story mode, but I did a little bit. And it was very slow, laborious.
Big Twilight Princess energy.
Yeah.
Twilight Princess energy.
You know what? You're probably right. I know that's a big criticism of that
but
game.
But once you get past that, it's good. Yeah, once you get past all that, it's good.
But I was really enjoying myself with the game. Joseph was saying, you're starting to get the grips of it now. But I feel like...
I can tell.
Yeah, it's great, like, as a foundation, but my main issue with it is the menu systems and the UI.
Yeah,
I feel like it's too complicated, and it should be streamlined a little bit. I found myself pressing the wrong button over and over again, like I used like 8 potions when I shouldn't have, you know. and then it's all clunky.
The PS one, like
I'm so sorry.
Chris said that he's like, but like I feel like how is this possible on 3DS?
It's just
what he said.
Yeah, it's just weird because you have to sheave your shield or sheave your weapon so you can pick up an item. You know, like it just feels weird to me, you know? And then I found that I didn't even upgrade my weapon. I just made more weapons of the same kind.
it's a skill tree. Yeah. It's a skill tree, so you have to like make the next weapon in the tree, basically. Yeah.
I don't know. There are some UI menu-ish problems I had with the game so far, but I think once I get more adjusted to the game, get more advice from you, Joseph, I think I'm going to enjoy Monster Hunter Rise. Like, after our session, Joseph, I immediately went back in, so yeah, I think I'm hooked.
Nice. Yeah, and that's the thing. It sinks its hooks in you. I will say, and this isn't me being like an apologist or whatever for the bad menus and stuff. I agree with you. I think they're not great, and I think the controls are weird and everything. But the thing is it's been like this since the game came out, and so I feel like a lot of us who have spent a lot of time with this series have just gotten used to it.
Yep.
And we almost have like Stockholm syndrome, I feel like, with it, because you mentioned all this stuff like, why, like, I can't pick up the item. Why can't I pick up the item? Oh, you have to put your sword away.
It's too many button presses, I think. That's my main criticism.
In my mind, it's like automatic, right? So I didn't even think of that. But yeah, that's a totally fair criticism. So anyway, and Josh, that's so funny you bring that up, that the Monster Hunter you played was on 3DS. Me too. The first Monster Hunter I played.
It was so stressful. I was like, I can't even read all this. Jeez.
Yeah, the first Monster Hunter I played was 3 Ultimate on 3DS, and I was telling Chris about this. It had cross-save with the Wii U, and basically I would go to school, play all day at school instead of doing schoolwork, and and then come home, transfer my save to the Wii U, and play online with that. I put 300 or 400 hours into that game on the Wii U. It's crazy. Anyway,
By the way, this game's awesome. Happy 10th birthday, 3DS.
Happy 10th for, you know, we should do a 3DS episode, I feel like.
I'll be down. That has a lot of good games on it.
That's one of my favorite systems. It has a good library.
Such a good system. So anyway, we'll have more to report on Monster Hunter Rise. So far, I think it does a lot it has a lot of improvements from previous entries, and I think this is a good starting point for people because it does streamline so many things. Chris, your complaints are all valid. But just keep in mind, and this is probably a bad thing, the previous ones were even more complicated. The previous ones were even more, touchy with the controls and all that. So
I do want to add one more thing, though. I don't think the combat should ever be like Devil May Cry. I think it makes sense that it's slow and impactful. I think that's what makes Monster Hunter really work, is that slow kind of methodical kind of like game combat.
I'm with you on that, but I do think it could use some improvements for sure. Okay, let's talk about It Takes Two.
Mm-hmm.
And so Josh, I know
I watched the first 45 minutes of it on YouTube on
Oh, that's such a shame. Why did you do that?
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't watch anything.
Be ready for the show.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah, but I'm still gonna buy and play it.
Like, Josh, I'll play this with you. Don't watch anymore. Yeah, because it's so cool. Okay, so first of all, we got a code for this from Hazelight, and EA. Thank you. Yeah. We got a copy for PlayStation, and Josh, you don't have a PlayStation. We gotta get all in sync with our systems here so we can all play games together. But nonetheless, we were playing this. And Chris and I were playing it, and this is like one of the coolest co-op games I've ever played. Yep. Like, it is just, it's like, I know this is cheesy, but I feel like it's magical. I know that's really cheesy to say that, but there's a really heartfelt story there that as soon as it started, I think I said, oh no, is it gonna be one of these games where like you cry? Oh no. And the premise, Chris, we can talk about the premise here, right? Without spoiling.
Not too much.
The premise is that two parents are getting divorced, and the daughter, who is very young, doesn't want them to get divorced, and she's got these dolls, two dolls, one that represents each of the parents, and she cries on the doll and the dolls, and the dolls become the parents. They are the dolls now, and you play as the doll version of the parents. And basically, you're very little, so it's kind of like that grounded game where you're like very small, and it like that's the game you're trying to get back to the daughter, and like most of the platforming and all that is like big versions of things, like, you know, we have a there's a hammer that's gigantic and you have to jump on these platforms that are gigantic because you're very small. And what's fascinating about this game is obviously the I guess he's the creative director, the head of the studio, Joseph Farris or Farris. He is batshit crazy. And when you hear him talk, it sounds like he's just spewing a bunch of bullshit, but the game's actually really good. So like, you know, like
I find him funny, honestly.
And
I his charisma really comes through with his character as the book. I'm not going to mention more about him, but he's kind of guiding these two through a journey of love and trying to...
I want to make sure that he is the book.
Oh, yeah, he is the book. There's no way he's not the book.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it sounds like him. Anyway, but what's really cool about this game is that it's basically like a greatest hits of platforming ideas and some new ideas as well. Yeah. And this is something Josh and I talked about with Super Mario 3D World, where there's just a new thing every, you know, couple minutes. And that's what this feels like. But it's done in a way that I feel like is a little bit more unique because of the perspective, because you're so small, you know? And there were these sections that were just...
The tutorials are really good in this, too. I'm not used to seeing good tutorials in games like this.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It kind of it kind of naturally, you did, like, one of the playthroughs I was watching, they just started playing. It was a good. It's a good example of show don't tell, and I love when games do that.
Yeah, and what's cool is you. It's split screen regardless of if you're playing locally or online, so you can always see the other character's screen.
But what I love about this game is that it twists and turns like the perspective to make it fit the level. And honestly, I think the way the levels are designed are immaculate. Like. Everything flows together so well. Everything feels lived in, you know? And just the puzzles come in, are so in tune with the platforming, it's incredible.
I really want to talk about
But
we can't talk about it because
what I love about this game, it kind of brings me back to the PS2 era, I guess, where when you're playing as the two characters, each of them have their own attributes to offer to the game.
Right.
So both players have to keep in mind those attributes and they work together knowing what they can do. You know?
Right.
And that helps with replayability as well, because then, you can play it with a different perspective. You can play it with a different weapon, for example. I'm not going to go any more into that. But... I feel like the boss battles are incredible as well. They're like they high budget, you know. They feel like high stakes. There's a lot of just the way it constantly kind of like surprises you as well with these boss battles is amazing. Honestly, I'm gonna say it's one of my favorite platformers I've ever played. And I've only like 3 or 4 hours in. It's also incredibly stunning. Like, if you told me that Sony published this game and made it, I would believe you. Because, like, it looks absolutely gorgeous on the PS5. The lighting is amazing. There's, I believe there's some rumble as well. The tactile feedback that the DualSense can give you. And, yeah, just everything feels so alive, it's so beautiful, it's vibrant, and it's just such a nice change from the usual kind of like game releases we get, you know, especially this year.
The game also is doing something that I've been wanting to see for a long time. It's not the only game doing this, but more games are starting to do this, which is kind of a response to ludonarrative dissonance. So what we're seeing is we're seeing game developers tie character growth and storytelling into the gameplay instead of them clashing, they're working hand in hand. And, you know, for a long time it was like, you know, well, yeah, that'd be cool, but how do we do that? And we're starting to see developers answer that question, and it's really nice to see, because it's interesting when games do that.
And also, I want to bring up, there's like these side events that really help with character growth as well, and they're kind of like...
You kicked my ass.
Yeah,
there are
versus kind of segments where you play a mini game like Mario Party or something, and whoever taps the button is it prevails pretty much, right? And I think Joseph and I we were doing it for like 3 minutes. We were like, oh my god!
Yeah, we were doing the tug of war.
Yeah, tug of war. I fell
in the hole.
And then there's also some like events that happen as well that surprise you and like offer a bit of humor. By the way, this game is very funny. Like how it spoofs like films and all sorts of things, like puts in references here and there. I just love this game, dude.
And I'm not really like a huge platformer fan, and I think this is great. Yeah. The one thing I wanted to end on is that if you buy a copy, the other you can play with somebody else for free. The other person doesn't have to buy a copy. So that like is like super enticing, and I think that goes to show like how, because this game is only playable in co-op, so that's like a great feature, you know, that it lowers the barrier to entry with this. So
and
yeah,
it's a smart business move as well, because if one person plays it for the guest pass and wants to play it with the different perspective, they'll invite someone else. They'll buy it themselves and then invite someone else to play it with them, right? So it's kind of like a growing kind of like word of mouth kind of like marketing tool.
Exactly. So Josh, I highly recommend playing this. I'll play it with you on Xbox. I want you to experience this game because I think it's really special.
I think we're going to be talking about this at the end of the year for our Game of the Year episode. It's that good.
Yeah, I do too. Cool. So that's it for me and Chris. Josh, talk to us about Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Volume 1.
Yeah, so this was pretty neat. I haven't played a lot of Neo Geo games, if any, other than like maybe some stuff on like PSN or Xbox Live Arcade, you know, like if they ported any.
Yeah.
I think I played like one of the Metal Slug games on there. But anyway, so this is on Switch, and it's got 10 different games. Originally, I think it launched with a couple less, but they're about to add more games. And I got to play, you know, all those, so I can mention them. So I'm going to list the game and then the genre, and then I'll talk a little bit about each one, you know, kind of quickly. So Dark Arms Beast Buster, 1999. It's an action RPG. Big Tournament Golf, you know, sports. Fatal Fury First Contact. SNK Gals Fighters. King of Fighters R2. The Last Blade, Beyond the Destiny, Samurai Showdown 2, and then SNK versus Capcom, the match, the Millennium, or of course all fighting games, and then also Metal Slug First Mission and Metal Slug Second Mission. So there's a lot of games on here. Before I mention the games a little bit, I just want to mention the kind of hub they exist in. So you can access the actual boxes and look at them and move them around, kind of like the Sonic Mega Collection Plus. Yeah. You can look through all the manuals.
So cool.
And then you can choose your setup for the game. So you can have it so it's just the screen of the game on your TV screen. You can zoom in and make it bigger or smaller. But you can also have it so there's a Neo Geo system around your screen instead of blank space. So that's neat. And you can even pick what color the systems are. It's got a bunch of the different models. I don't know if it's all of them or not because I didn't play the Neo Geo back in the day. But there's a lot of different, you know, models you can kind of pick from. So that's cool. And then these games are all available in the black and white version or the color or the new color version. I can't speak on a lot of specifics. Yeah. Since I didn't play these on original hardware. But from what I could gather from what it looks like a lot of these games were kind of like the kind of get like a Pokemon Gold and Silver, where it was like, this is a Game Boy game, but it's enhanced to Game Boy Color. It seems like that because I booted them up in the different modes and it was like, it still looked really good in black and white, but like, in the color version, there was just, you know, a bunch of color added. So I'm assuming that's done on a hardware level, kind of like Game Boy Color did with Game Boy games. But let's see. So just a little bit of... Oh, and then also, of course, there's a rewind feature, and there's also...
Good.
You can remap controls and stuff, too. So it's if you haven't played these games, this is the best way to do it.
Rewind is essential with retro gaming now, in my
opinion. Yeah, I can't play a lot of old games without that. So I'm not good at golf games, but I have my notes here. The manual is very helpful. I actually looked through the manual to figure out how the golf game worked. I Googled the word bogey because I didn't know what that meant.
What? Oh, bogey's when you get a minus four or a nose. Minus one. Minus
one. It's a nasty thing that comes out of your nose.
No, minus one is a bogey.
So big tournament golf, really cool. It was really cute, really colorful, and I was actually able to get a hole in one at one point. So I was starting to pick up on it and learn, so that was neat. Dark Arms Beast Busters, kind of like a Zelda-ish game. Oh. But instead of the open world, it's like their hubs. But it's like, imagine like a link to the past or like the first Zelda, but like instead of the moving to all the areas, it's like you just pick where you're going. But yeah, that's really cool. It's got upgradable weapon systems and really hard, but again, rewind feature is a savior here. Fatal Fury First Contact, it's a fighting game. It's I'm not good at fighting games, but I was able to do pretty well when I was playing this. It's got really simple basic controls, and then it kind of naturally, it didn't feel like when I would try to play Street Fighter back in the day, and like the attacks were either basic or complicated. This one had kind of a good ebb and flow in the middle.
It kind of formed its own genre in fighting games.
It did, yeah. It definitely felt like its own thing. This one was one of my favorite ones, SNK Gals Fighters. This one was really pretty, and it had like flashing lights and like effects in the background. I wish I had a Neo Geo back in the day, because this thing's like a souped up, almost like in between Game Boy and Game Boy Advance, and this was competing with the Game Boy and Game Boy Color, so it's like they were, you know, really... this is pre-Game Boy Advance, and it just looks... It's a lot more detailed. The screen's small on the original system. I looked it up, 2.6 inches, but...
Oh, wow.
Of course, you can zoom in on here.
Does it look bad when it's on
the big
screen?
It looks good. I think it probably just had really good resolution for the screen size, is what I'm guessing. Because, yeah, there's a lot of detail on there. But, yeah, for the SNK Gals Fighters, music was really good, too. King of Fighters 12-2. I'm not good at the King of Fighters games. I've tried... Those are the ones I have played before. I tried them out just to see how they play. They play really good. There's no issues. I'm just really bad at those games. That brand of fighting games. I'm not good at the easy fighting games. Like, even I'm bad at like Street Fighter. I'm not good at fighting games. But same thing with Last Blade, Beyond the Blade. It plays well. I'm just not good at fighting games. The Metal Slug games are fucking awesome. I don't know if you haven't played them, it's worth grabbing this collection alone for those. Have you guys played those?
I have.
No, nope, yeah. I have not.
Okay. I played Metal Slug like on the arcade back in the day.
Okay. They're run and gun games, and you get power ups, you get different weapons, missiles. You get the Metal Slug tank, which can run enemies over and just fire in all directions.
I'm sold.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah, I'm not that really old, fun. By the way. I just played like it like an old arcade when I was a kid. But
I always tell people when I tell people the NES was my first system, I always say I'm not old. I just grew up poor. Like my neighbors, my friends had Super Nintendos, and I was still. You know, had the NES. The SNK versus Capcom game was really, really cool. Like, I played this one for a long time. It's actually got, like, these cute graphics. Not quite like the chibi style. Am I saying that right, Chris?
Yeah.
Chibi, yeah.
Okay. Not quite like that, but kind of like one foot in that and kind of like... kind of reminds me of those what are they, Noid?
The Nindroids.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that style a little bit, because it's like it still looks like Zangief, but he looks like a cute little figure. So that was really cool getting to see Capcom figures in this like weird and different style.
That series is well renowned. Like it's one of the most loved fighting game series ever.
It's good. Yeah. Like I'm gonna be playing this one for a long time. But yeah, I would super recommend this. There's 10 games in it. It's $40 full price. You're getting, you know, really good games for $4 a piece. And I don't even like golf games that much. I've always been one of those, like, I don't like golf games except Mario Golf, but this golf game was really cool. So.
You gotta play Everybody's Golf. That's the best golf
game. I wanna play that one. Yeah, that one looks really fun. But yeah, very good. And then other than that, I'm not gonna be talking about it just because of where we are on time. But I am replaying Gex Enter the Gecko. I have not played it in 20 years, and I'm doing a retro review of that on RetroWare. And I played it a lot back in the day, but I haven't played it, since then. So it's been fun.
Oh, and you got a review code for Neo Geo, right, for RetroWare?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Okay. No. Well, I requested it for RetroWare, and then someone was already covering it, so I was like, I'll just do my coverage.
Oh.
On ActiveQuest.
There you go.
So. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Beautiful. Cool. Thank you, Josh. That's I'm looking at our list of games, and that's a very varied
eclectic
list of games here.
Yes.
Yeah, very eclectic group. So cool. All right, that wraps us up for episode 113. Chris, Josh, thank you for your time. Thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, where can people find you when you're not on the show?
Yeah, you can find me at PanwellWrites on Twitter. You can check out my written work on The Gamer and Tech Raptor and RetroWare. A bunch of cool articles coming up there. I have 2 reviews coming out soon for Doctor Who, The Lonely Assassins, and Lost Words Beyond the Page for RetroWare, and I'm excited to write about them. I'm also going to have a feature on a new website, and I'm very excited about it. I'm going to do the interview tomorrow for it, and I'm just like, I can't wait to share about it. But yeah, you can also check out my my other podcast, my My Hero Academia podcast, Go Beyond. Each and every week, Vaughn Hyde and I, we go through the excruciating details of each and every episode. And I'm glad that Joseph Yaden seems to be loving the show. The actual cartoon, not me. Not our
you
podcast.
Should see if he wants to guest sometime. I bet you could get him on.
Oh,
there.
Man.
Oh, we have plenty of spoilers on there, so I know it's going to be a long way out, I think.
I would do an episode with you guys, yeah, if there was no spoilers, and if you're cool with me, I've only seen a few episodes, so I don't know how good I'll be on.
Funnily enough,
yeah, very good show.
I got my sister to watch it recently, right? And she was just waiting, but she was just around the door. So I thought, hey, Sophie, do you want to get on the podcast just to talk some shit about My Hero? And we did that, so it's kind of funny.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's it for me.
Josh, where can people find you when you're not on ActiveQuest?
You could find me on Twitter at @itsdrickJosh. Also, you can read my work on RetroWare. I had an article go up almost every day last week. I didn't notice that until a few minutes ago.
You're killing it, man.
Very tired. But I just reviewed Journey of the Broken Circle, and that was very good. And I also just did an article on The Gaming Historian. I would really recommend that. I rewatched every single one of the YouTube videos that I'd been watching that channel for a long time, but I hadn't seen every video.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I'm doing this feature, I want to watch every video in chronological order. And like, that was cool, period, because I like The Gaming Historian. But like, I just gotta say, it was really interesting starting off at like 2008 YouTube and then going forward. You know, YouTube used to be like so much more warm and unique and and different. Like, it just reminded me, like, I don't know, YouTube changed so much.
YouTube changed,
sponsored by Squarespace.
There's definitely still good stuff on YouTube, but like, man, like, it used to just be people being like, hey, I'm here to talk to you about this thing I'm really interested in. It was just all people like that, and it was
Go listen to my ray guns. Go get your ray guns.
Oh my god. Alright, thank you, Josh. And you can find me on Twitter at Joseph Yaden. You can find my work at Digital Trends, Games Radar, a bunch of other places. I'm going to be having a lot of coverage for Monster Hunter over at Digital Trends, so you guys can check that out. And then this coming week, I think there's an update going live for Warzone, so I'll have some coverage over at Games Radar for that.
Also, I just saw all your Fortnite stuff you wrote. Holy shit, you've been busy.
Oh yeah, I cover Fortnite every week.
Yeah.
Every single week. Yeah.
I was looking through your Muckrat, because I check for your guys' articles when I'm if I happen to be doing run a show, and I saw like just just so much stuff. Well, I was like, oh my
gosh. Yeah, because when the new season of Fortnite dropped, there's all these new things, and so I'm like, well, I gotta do all that.
It's like that day in the office when Michael Scott has like all four of those paperwork days line up on the one day. It's like that for you with Fortnite when the new when the new season starts.
Exactly.
You need to squad up for that, Joseph.
We do need to squad up. Fortnite's so fun playing Fortnite because it's so much easier than Warzone. Like, I get dubbed so easily. Oh my god, yeah, I get dubbed so easily in Fortnite.
The whole building shenanigans though, that like kills me every time.
I still get dubbed. Really? I win like half the games I play.
Jesus. We should all squad up. I'm pretty good at Fortnite too.
Let's do it.
So we want to thank everybody for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.